Blog Talk Radio.
Cycle. Welcome to Matters of the Heart, the late night edition again. I did my best, those of you that tuned in this morning. The circuits were tied up this morning to not get in to the show for anything. The circuits were tied, and so I had no choice but to reschedule the show for late night tonight. Because, you know, now I have tweaked the schedule where Motivate Monday airs on Monday at 5:30 and Matters of the Heart at 5:30 on Wednesday, and on Fridays 3 o'clock for talk and weekend talk. But this Friday it will air at 5 o'clock. And we're going to talk recipes with my mother on Friday. So those of you that love good recipes, I don't know anyone who does not. Tune in, and we're going to talk about recipes throughout this fall and holiday season. Love to hear about your recipes too. We're always sharing recipes online and in person and all of that. Wow! And guess who's coming back on the 5th? True God Immortal. Pam Greer, community activist. Former Ward 3 here in Jackson, Mississippi, city council person candidate, will be with us on Sunday on October the 6th, and we're just having a blast. But tonight we're talking about Florida Singles. This is part two from last Wednesday's broadcast, and the happily married couples, and also those that choose not to be married, but they're happy couples. And I know I'm so unlucky in love, but I love talking about love, romance, and relationships, huh? And Belinda Bostic is returning on next Wednesday to talk about all the new, awesome, naughty, nice, hot products with Slumber Parties by BelindaBostic.com. And I will be hosting an online party. Yes, finally, yay! With Belinda, Slumber Parties by BelindaBostic.com, starting on October 1st. If you want to get on my invite list, get your email address to me so you could be included on my invite list, because it's going to be nice, naughty, and sexy at the time. And wow, she has a lot of new awesome products and also, goodies out there. And, you know, and talking to Belinda is always educational. And so definitely looking forward to her return. You know, we hadn't had a visit from her since, wow, it's like late spring. So looking forward to that and looking forward to celebrating the online party that I'll be hosting with her as well on October 1st. So you guys be sure to get your emails addressed to me so I can get you on the invite list, okay? You can inbox it to me or email it to me. Those of you that want to, you know, place it on my Facebook page or whatever social media networking site that you network with me on, now you know how to get it to me. But thank you. So, again, we're talking about where to sing. You know, we talked about the different cities where singles are, single women, single men, couples, and all that last Wednesday. We ran out of time. And also, if you're so happy, what do you talk about to keep you being happy? You know, happy couple. And then optimistic single, like my friend Dean, what keeps him so motivated being a happy-go-lucky bachelor? You know, there's bachelorettes out there, too. What keeps you going and motivated? But well, I ran across a lot of research I've been sharing the past week regarding those topics. So, you know, and, you, and a lot of times couples and happy singles and not-so-happy singles call into the show and Nettles Lane chat room. So please don't hesitate to call and share your advice. Because when you guys do call, or when you do, when you, well, we always chat in the chat room, you share awesome, awesome advice. And old Pianchi, he know he shared advice when he talks about his he and his wife been together since they were teens. That's awesome. So I think that would be cool. And if we have enough time, we can talk about the relationships between singles and married couples, you know. But again, thank you for your feedback and your love and your continued support. I really appreciate you wholeheartedly. If you're a new listener or you've been with Culture Shock Entertainment Sports since March 21st, 2011. Thank you.
tells you that I love you with all of my heart. I could have told you, could have told you from the very start. Now you've gone away. I just hope it's not too far. Hope it's not too late. Now this whole thing is so bizarre. I should have told you just how much I love your smile. I could have given you mine in return, but that was not my style. I should have told you just how much I love your kiss. I should have told you, now I'm sitting here just reminiscing. As you've gone away, I'm sitting here kicking my own bell. I was just acting way too hard. Could I have you, baby? Barefoot and pregnant, four kids in our backyard. But you went away. Wait just 1 minute. Is that the doorbell? I hear it. Please tell me you've come back home. This song I won't have to be singing.
Should I, would have done better. I know you were gonna leave. I never let you. Now I'm writing you this letter.
Would have done better.
Could have. Would have done better. Larry Graham and Prince. I love that. You all know I love that. And thank you for liking the Prince fan page that I have. You know, it's been a minute since I checked on it. You know, someone sent me a message. And we're at 67 likes on the Hollywood Walk of Fame star for Prince Purple Love Bizarre campaign page that I created probably like early, like during the holiday season last year. And so we have like 67 likes. Let's get to 100, then 200, then 300, then 400, then 500, then 1,000 and thousands of likes in promotion of this campaign that I have started, and others are, you know, have been campaigning too for years for Prince to finally, be nominated to receive his Hollywood Walk of Fame star. And, you know, back in 2004, he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and all overseas he's been inducted. But when we visit Hollywood, there's no star for Prince. And I know he knows time, past time, and those of us that have, those that have worked with him and are proteges and work with him now, you know, it's a collective thing now. You know, the fans, supporters, families, you know, oh, you know, it's time to celebrate and watch the Purple Man himself get his Hollywood Walk of Fame star. And so thank you for liking the fan page that I have called Hollywood Walk of Fame Star for Prince. Purple Love is our campaign. I'll start posting more, and you guys feel free to post and share your love for Prince. Also, in my About section, I have the multi-talented Prince has entertained us nonstop since the 70s, not only via Musical.ly, but within other industries, not to mention his humanitarian work. So let's do this. And you know, when a celebrity is nominated, it's very important for that that celebrity to agree to be present when presented the star. You know, I don't think of, you know, so that's important. So Prince agreed to receive it and be present during the ceremony. Hey, hey, hey. You know, it's on. And I think he's ready. I mean, only he can share with us when he's ready. But we must show our love and motivation and get him nominated. Do our part, the ones that support and would like to see a star in Hollywood. Next, you know, really, I want to be present. You want to be present when you get a star, or when you visit Hollywood in the near future, you want to see his star right there in Hollywood. It's amazing, amazing, amazing. But again, thank you for liking the page. I didn't intend to mention that. As you said, right when the show began, I seen where someone had sent me a message, and I haven't read the message yet. And I'm like, cool. And then I see that we have almost 70 likes. So, hey, we can go ahead and get to that 100 and so on. Maybe we can start doing other things like promotions and giveaways and stuff like that to really pump up the campaign. But thank you for tuning in and looking forward to having an awesome show. It's a late night edition again. And late night is usually fun anyway. But thank you.
En la Asociación Americana del Pulmón, luchamos por el día en que todos podamos respirar más fácilmente. Luchamos por cielos claros sobre todas las ciudades y pulmones saludables en todo el país. Luchamos por mantener el humo de otros fuera de nuestros espacios públicos y lugares de trabajo. Y luchamos para liberar a millones de estadounidenses de la adicción al tabaco y los efectos devastadores de las enfermedades pulmonares. Luchamos por un día en que los niños no tengan que luchar contra la contaminación en sus propias casas y tengan temor a un ataque de asma. La Asociación Americana del Pulmón no solo está luchando por el aire, luchamos por todas las cosas por las que vale la pena respirar. Y necesitamos su ayuda. Únase a la lucha. Visite luchandoporelaire.org y lea sobre algunas de las muchas formas en las que la Asociación Americana del Pulmón lucha para proteger el aire que respiramos, dentro y fuera de casa. Conozca más en luchandoporelaire.org.
At the American Lung Association, we're fighting for a day when we can all breathe easier. We're fighting for clear skies over every city and healthy lungs throughout the country. We're fighting to free millions of Americans from the addictive grip of tobacco and the devastating effects of lung disease. The American Lung Association isn't just fighting for air, we're fighting for all the things that make it worth breathing, and we can use your help. See what you can do at fightingforair.org.
Me? I started smoking when I was 13. I always thought when the time came, I could quit. No problem. Then at 28, I tried to go cold turkey, and I found out how hard it really was. I made it all day without a smoke. Right until I met up with the guys. But I learned something that night. In fact, every time I tried to quit, there were more than a few, I learned a little more about what worked and what didn't work for me. And when I realized that I wasn't alone, that most people don't quit on their first or second attempt, I knew there was still hope. Today, I'm an ex-smoker. My only advice is to never, ever give up trying to quit.
If you're trying to quit smoking, the American Lung Association is here to help every step of the way. Visit quitterinyou.org for tools, tips, and stories from smokers we've helped to finally quit for good. The American Lung Association. We support the quitter in you at quitterinyou.org.
Midnight, and that's the name of the song, Midnight Dream. That is my longtime Facebook friend, Charisma, straight from Istanbul, Turkey. He is just an amazing talent. So, you know, it's midnight, so why not Midnight Dreams? Last week, okay, that's kind of ironic. Last week, and this is part two of the show, where are all the singles? Where are the happy singles living? And we talked about the top cities where you can, in areas where you can find where the singles are, cities that are friend, are you know, friendly to singles and friendly also to happily married couples. And when the show was done last Wednesday on the 18th, some people probably thought I knew this, but I did not know last week was Happy National Singles Week. Happy National Singles Week was last week. Right when I finished broadcasting the show, it was revealed to me that it was Happy National Singles Week. So I have been sharing a lot of information in celebration of Happy National Singles Week and Unmarried People, Week. And, right now, I'm looking at a website, littlemail.com, and this person is talking a big time about National Singles Week. And Little Mail says, let your heart heal life coaching with a twist. It is my goal to increase awareness on the benefits and improve the quality of your life in all areas, relationships, career issues, and progression, and emotional health and wellness, spiritual awareness. Someone close to me is online right now, and I know health and wellness and spiritual awareness is very important to her and in life in general. And Little Mail's website is littlemail.com, littlemail@littlemail.com. But talking about Happy National Singles Week, goes on to say that better single fabulous than in a relationship and unhappy. I agree with that. And she's based in St. Louis. So, wow, that's a lot of someone that's interesting to have on the show. But this is something I want to share real quick, what she had to say about the celebration of being single. While there are pros and cons to living life as a single person, this week is dedicated to embracing the joys and perks of being single. Here's what I have learned about being single. Being single has given me more time to focus on myself, discover who I am, the chance to reflect, reconnect, and rediscover what makes me happy. Because I spend a lot of time by myself, I really do know me and what makes me tick. Self-discovery, and you really find out what you like about yourself and don't like, and what flaws that you want to correct, that you work on, and then what flaws you say, what the heck? Like Beyonce said, my flaws and all, And then she goes to say, being single has brought me closer to my family and good friends. Living alone does not mean you have to be lonely. I am lucky to have such wonderful and supportive adult children that enjoy spending time together, doing family activities. And then, and then there are friends out there that are, and other people in your life that are joyous, And then she says that I am grateful for the close friendships I have made over the years, exactly, whether my seasoned friendships newly developed online, offline, are those yet to be. I appreciate the flavor, color, and warmth each one brings into my life. And she says that being single has helped me to step outside of my comfort zone and explore places, ideas, and activities I might not have as part of a couple. Being single allows me to do things around the house, in the nude, cook, clean, laundry, et cetera, just because I can. This is something new and fresh. This is something that I know that I haven't tweeted and shared. I just shared it on Facebook. Being single means my time and money is my own. I can spend it however I want. I love having the option to indulge in whatever suits me for the moment. Art, theater, volunteerism, hobbies, travel, and pastimes that I can spend as much or as little time doing. Sleeping in, going out, standing in, or hanging out in my PJs. That sounds good, someone that designs PJs. All day, whatever I want to do. Being single means my home is just the way I want it to be. I don't have to pick up after another person. I don't mind my pets on the furniture or sleeping in the bed with me. I have a complete control over the remote. It's perfectly fine. I'm going to even curled with my fur babies, watching classic movies or cartoons if I feel like it. A lot of animal lovers are always in the audience, so I know single or married or whatever, love that. Being single gives me the option to stay for a nice evening, but it's time for you to go now. And yes, I would like you to stay. Totally up to me. Bottom line, being fabulously single and happy by being happy with yourself, by being comfortable in your own skin. This woman sounds like me. It's about being happy, period. Being single doesn't have to mean been afraid to love. Trust me, my heart has been bumped, bruises, and been broken a few times in my life. Being single has taught me not to live my life as a traumatized victim of failed relationships. But if the next person would treat my heart with kindness, love, and respect. Staying open to love isn't about attracting a new relationship. It's about being open to living life. So, singles, what is your attitude about singles? And that's her question. And she's on Facebook, her advisor, Little Nail, and, of course, littlenail.com is what I'm on right now, her website. We're on her blogspot, advisorlittlenail.blogspot.com. So she's this amazing she's a life coach and author and professional advisor. And her company is Let Your Heart Heal Life Coaching. That's another one that, because I'm in the midst of booking and scheduling guests since I, you know, have been on hiatus and now back, I'm like booking and scheduling guests. And she definitely sounds interesting to have on the show to talk with, especially we're coming so close to the end of the year. And if those of you that make resolutions, it's time to think about and consider those resolutions. But a little bit more about her is Melody McGowan, and she's called Little Mel, and she's in St. Louis. I have a nephew in St. Louis, and I have friends and those that I work with in Avon in St. Louis. Melody maintains an online private counseling practice in St. Louis metro area, providing counseling and coaching and consulting services to adults via phone or chat sessions. Melody has a special interest in supporting those facing various life management issues, with a focus on personal growth, healing, and spiritual renewal. Wow. A practicing clairsentient, clairconscient. You know, I know about clairvoyancy, but she's like all the, like a lot of the clairs and spiritual advisor. Melody offers insight and personal. I know some of you probably saying, no way. But Melody offers insight and personal advice about phone or chat. She's an ordained minister and holds a doctorate in metaphysics, a master's and a bachelor's university degrees in counseling, human resources, and education. Melanie weaves together warmth, wit, and wisdom as she jointly connects with clients and challenges them to live their best life. Melanie also enjoys writing inspirational blogs entitled Random Ramblings from Little Nell. I feel like I've heard her seen her writings before. Melanie has been using her former training combined with practical, solid advice that literally thousands of people see their way clearly, make the right decision for their lives, and guide them along their spiritual path. So I felt compelled to share a little bit about her bio because, you know, sometimes, you know, people just, you know, just giving advice. But she is honestly a doctor in not just clairvoyant, but she's a lot of a clairvoyant, and they ain't ministered that. So I just wanted to share that. And that caught my attention right at the beginning of the show because I've been sharing other stories that you probably thought I was going to talk about, but I did not know when I entitled the show, Where Are the Singles? I did not know it was Happy Singles Week. I really didn't. So that is just amazing right there. So I got off away from the studio because I'm going to get back to the studio. I'm not sure if my loved one that's online is going to chat with us and talk with us about the various topics and other topics concerning matters of the heart, but in hot topics, there's been a lot of stuff going on. What is going on with Chloe and Lamar? Because I hear that on Instagram, I was watching Wendy Williams, and I network with Chloe, but I hadn't had time to network and notice the stuff. And I heard on Wendy Williams that she has removed the Odom from her name on Instagram. So what's going on? Some people probably say, who cares? But you guys know how I am into those Kardashians and those Jenners. So I'm like, what is really going on? Like Dean usually says, what is really going on? But I'm going to get back in the studio right quick, see if my callers or anyone in the chat room want to come in and talk about certain things. I remember on Friday, we're going to be talking recipes. Mama will be sharing some of her favorite recipes. And if you love, I know many of you do, so I don't have to say if you love comfort food, that's what we're going to talk about. just good food. I guess we're going to start. We've been going through recipes that my mother actually cooked. So I'm trying to think, should we go over different recipes or should we, like, stick to, like, the bacon, like cakes and pies and recipes like that. And then in a future date, we'll talk about stuff like dressings and other dishes, meat. Like, because in London now, we were talking earlier on Facebook about proper ways of cooking chicken and turkey. So, yeah, you know, we're talking. We're always talking about food, so let's talk about food recipes. Because we all like good food. We're cooking it ourselves or out eating it at a restaurant. So we're talking recipes. And thank you for those of you that are calling in. If you want to say something, please press 1. Because I'll get to talking about the cities, and are you in a city that's friendly to singles? I can go over and recap some of the cities that I talked about last Wednesday. Cincinnati is top of the list for where the happy couples are, if I'm not mistaken. And there's happy single women are. It's amazing. Shape.com provided like the top 10 cities where single women can really have a blast and make good money and really do and be healthy. So that's a good thing. We heard good news today for Mississippi. Mississippi is like number 6 of one of the most generous states, or Jackson, one of the most generous states in the nation. Love to volunteer, love to do charity work, stuff like that. So that was good news for us today, what we like to do. Here's El DeBarge, and those of you on the calling line, if you want to say something, just whenever you're ready to say something, press 1. Here's El DeBarge.
Happy. mind. It ain't cool. And I'm so through with you. It ain't cool. Got me going out my mind.
I know many of you are members of Match.com. Martha Stewart is a member of Match.com. You guys know that? I wonder how she's doing with that. After the show, I did join Speed Date. Remember I said I was going to check that out and invite the founder on the show? I joined because I want to invite the founder on the show. And that is a kind of neat concept of a dating website. I'm not looking. I joined it for fun and research, and that is an interesting online dating website. Just like you do speed dating at a restaurant or a club, it is an online speed dating website. And I thought, when I joined, I automatically was getting like speed. You honestly do like a little speed thing with people. I mean, it's an amazing concept. I can't wait to, I hope when I invite the founder on the show, he accepts, because that's going to be some fun talk. Are you talking about Uncool? I'm looking at Match.com, a blog on Match.com called Happen Because Love Doesn't Come With Instructions. And they're talking about like the uncool state and the best state for singles, the best and worst states for singles. And see, only talked about like the top and the best cities for singles and happily married couples, happy couples, period. And this is what they say about the best and worst dates for singles. Are you looking for love but unsure of where to go next? A recent Pew Research Center study examining marriage and divorce rates by state could help you in your search. So if you're looking to change your status or whatever in a good or bad way, it's kind of good to take notes. Did you ever consider the possibility that real estate and dating have something in common? Maybe the key to finding success in both these areas really does come down to location, location, location. That thought occurred to me as I pored over the Pew Research Center's report, Marriage and Divorce, a 50-state tour, which examines data from a recently released survey. And this is published by writer Dave Singleton. And he says that including current marriage and divorce rate estimates for the past 12 months, he said, and then there's the average duration of marriages by state. Then there's a number of Americans have been married multiple times, three or more. I've done the two. thankfully, where are states where it's raining single men? Hey, that's what I'm talking about. I wonder, given all this marriage data, what are the implications for singles? Does the state of your dating life correlate to the state where you live? According to DeVera Cohn, senior writer for the Pew Research Center, the data does provide clues for where singles can and should be looking in order to increase their odds of finding an attractive mate. Attractive mate. You hear that? Since finding a lasting relationship is hard enough without any geographic obstacles, we'll take all the clues we can get, right? In my role as a geo-targeted dating sleuth, that's what he calls himself, I uncovered some key trends and single-friendly spots to aid your search. And, you know, you might be like me, not searching, but if Cupid just so happens to strike unexpectedly, you want to be prepared. Key trends. Number one, the Midwest is more like a desert for single women. With a high share of currently married men, the five states where single women struggle the most. Listen, single women, you can't get married to a man who's already married. The five states where single women struggle the most to find a date are Idaho, Iowa, Kansas, Utah, and Nebraska. These are states where people tend to grow up, stay around, and settle down. This poem, on one hand, it's refreshing to see sticky states that maintain their hometown boys and girls. But on the other hand, without the influx of new singles into the mix, dating opportunities for women living in these states are pretty limited. And then number two, but thankfully there are states where it's raining single men. On the other end of the spectrum, these five states are loaded with single men. New York, New Mexico, Rhode Island, Alaska. I don't know if I'm ready to freeze. And the District of Columbia, D.C. They're literally all over the map, too. But at least you have diverse choices. You can meet more educated cosmopolitan men in the Northeast states like New York, D.C., and Rhode Island. And I have a lot of listeners. Thank you, listeners in New York, in the DMV area, Rhode Island. Everywhere throughout America. And, shout out to the U.K. Shout out to Ebony Empress. Your shows have been off the hook recently. Thank you for your support, and thank you for when you do call in and share so much amazing advice. I mean, Ebony gives, like, the best relationship and life advice anybody I've ever met. let's see. And they go on to say, are Atlanta rugged type up north where the nights are long and there are few romantic distractions than you'll find in urban areas? Alaska. Somewhere in between these two streams, you can also try the Southwest, New Mexico, where hopefully the men are as hot as the food. And then there's number three. If all your exes live in Texas, y'all know I love me some Texas, then maybe singles should avoid the Lone Star State. Cohen wonders, the singer George Strait was onto something when he's saying, all my exes live in Texas. The numbers show that Texas is indeed home to more adults that have been married multiple times. Three marriages or more than any other state. Wow. Which doesn't exactly put out the welcome mat to singles looking for one love that'll last a lifetime. So you might find love, but you might find it multiple times is what they're saying. Something must be in the air down there since the neighboring states of Arkansas and Oklahoma also boast, if that's the word, high numbers of people who've been married and divorced multiple times. Worse, these multiple marriages correlate with having a low income and a double whammy. You know, I'm kind of surprised, too. Like the Midwestern states are the ones where you find the committed marriages, the people that will settle down. But, you know, I being down here in the Bible Belt, too, but I see a lot of divorce down here. There's a lot of marriages that last down here. I'm kind of surprised. You would think in the Bible Belt you would see marriages last. You know, but not. And then for the emphasis and I talked about last week, remember? We talked about the divorce rate in the UK and here in the US, and what causes it, and you know, the high number of it. The UK even has a high rate. Then number four, red may be the color of roses and romance, but red states are not so lucky for singles. I'm in a red state. The Pew report also reveals that conservative states in the Midwest and Northwest, Utah, Wyoming, North and South Dakota, Nebraska, and Kansas are less welcoming for singles on the move. First, these states have higher proportions of men and women who get hitched young and stay the course. By age 24, half of the women in Utah and Idaho are already married at this home. These places may offer a beautiful scenery and clean living, but unfortunately, they aren't singles magnets. It has been dating options, and the time to explore them matters to you. So, you know what? That is really important when you're relocating, you know, and then, like, singles that have been relocated by their jobs or other reasons. I mean, I guess it's important to find out what's going on in the dating world or the areas of finding love. If you're looking for love, don't mind, you know, falling in love. You know, you want to know these things. Well, a little looking on the side note, it says, beneath the national statue of the federal differences among states, which we see. Number five, Washington is a capital locale in many ways than one. Washington, D.C. scores highest among all states for share of educated singles that marry later in life and experience fewer divorces than national average. That's good to know. Bingo, as noted in my article, he said he had written an article called Best First Date Spot in D.C. It's a great place to date. And I can tell, I have friends who live in D.C. from here, and then my online friends who are in D.C., they seem to have the most amazing fun. The singles seem to always have, you know, things to do and meet up and just have a blast of a good time. I love looking at the pictures of my friends who reside in D.C. and work in D.C. because the singles there, they just have a blast of a good time. So it seems like D.C. is a place where you find not only the happy married people, but you find happy singles too. They say that the higher incidence of couples marrying later in life indicates that you might have more time to date around before saying I do. And despite the rap D.C. gets as being Hollywood for unattractive people, it scores high in employment rates, culture, and good-looking people. That said, as a local, so the writer is in D.C., I might be a bit biased. And number six, he says that, is Carolina on your mind? If you're a single woman and such an unattached man, then North Carolina should be on your mind and your radar. The state's higher-than-average population of single men is the state's only attractive attribute. A relatively affordable cost of living, that has been a topic that many of us have been talking about. My cousin Linda and I, we have been talking about the cost of living from this medium-sized city and the major city that she's in. And laid-back lifestyle regularly lands the state on annual list of best places to live. What's the drawback? Well, rich cities named like Moorhead City, Poor Town, and Horny Town. I know a lot of people need to be in Horny Town. Picking a city to live in might feel awkward. Simply, you can't make this stuff up. That sounds like Jay, my attorney friend. He and I both, we always are amazed at stuff that you just could not make up. This is like the can't make this stuff up file. So stick to the more mainstream towns like Raleigh, Durham, and Asheville, and you'll be fine. That's in North Carolina. Forget the myths about Hollywood divorce. California scores. Despite all the stories you read about Hollywood celebrity relationships, catastrophes, and divorces, California has both a larger population of available singles and lower percentages of divorcees than the U.S. at large. Wow. Great weather, sexy people, and good opportunities for meeting other singles go west. You know what? That's a good point. I mean, just personally speaking, I have friends who were from here, Mississippi, and they live in California, and their marriages seem like the happiest marriages I have ever seen. And then, on the other hand, my friends who are from there or live there that are single, they seem to be happy too. But I noticed that with my friends who live in California. They are happily, it seems like they're happily married. They're talking that they're happily married. They appear to be happily married. A lot of my friends from here, from Mississippi and part of the South. Eight, singles might not find relationship gold in the hills of Nevada. Nevada can be great fun for gamblers, but if you want your romance to be a sure thing, the odds aren't so great. With the highest share of divorcees, including a healthy percentage of them having been married three times or more, and a surprisingly higher than average share of single people, the home state of Sin City can be seen as something of a revolving door for relationships. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, except for successful long-term marriages, it seems. Oh, man. Maybe that's why Chris Angel has been engaged for all these years to Sandra. When are you and Sandra getting married, Chris? Chris is getting ready to premiere his new show. But they're talking about his personal life. I'm excited to see his new show. I've been waiting, because I miss Mind Freak, and so this new show on Spike TV is just going to be amazing. If you like Chris Angel like I do, or if you don't, if you're a law, check out his Facebook page, because I hadn't looked at his video, but yesterday he shared, I think some footage from maybe his premiere show or the behind the scenes or something. What about the other states? After all this analysis on marriage statistics, what surprised Cohen the most about the study's findings and its implications for singles? Wow, one of my friends lived in Las Vegas, but she's down here now, and I did not know she had moved to Las Vegas, but she and her boyfriend, she talking as if they're loving living in Las Vegas. It's a beautiful place to live and everything. I know whenever I finally travel to Las Vegas, I'm just going to fall in love with the place. But back to this. For example, with its lower education levels and a smaller percentage of singles, the state of New York is overall profile is very different than the one for New York City, says Cohen. Knowing this, you can look to states with strong urban centers and the greatest job opportunities if you want to boost your relationship chances. And so this goes into, and of course, my friend Dean of City of Atlanta is there. And you know, he's talking about moving from Los Angeles to Atlanta, you know, because he's an investor in independent black films, webisodes, and all that good stuff. You all, if you listen to the show, you know. But they say that the greatest opportunities if you want to boost your relationship chances are in Chicago, Illinois, Boston, Massachusetts, Los Angeles, California, Atlanta, Georgia also get high marks. And unfortunately, love doesn't come with a GPS, so clues like these and a little luck, hopefully you'll find a dating location that's right for you. And some of you might be disagreeing, saying, wait a second, I live in one of those states where singles are looking love, and I found love, and you know, but this is research and study that this David Singleton, an award-winning writer and columnist for Match.com since 2003, so he sounds like an expert. This is what he is revealing. And he is the author of two books on dating and relationships. And you can send comments to him at davesingleton.writer@gmail.com. Now, that was interesting because that's why I had to conclude into a part two of that topic, because I only had time to talk about the best cities and the favorite cities and cities that were friendly to singles or happily married couples and all that good stuff. So that's very interesting. So I'm headed back to the studio. I had left the studio so I can share this article with you, because I thought that was very interesting, you know, the uncool states and the states that are cool for single people. And that was courtesy of Match.com. So I'm headed on back to blogtalkradio.com studio, and I am so glad that the circuits are not tied up. I was like, oh, my God, I wanted to keep my word that I'm back doing the AM broadcast. But next Wednesday, in the AM, below the Boston, we're talking naughty, nice, and sexy stuff. And that will be next Wednesday on October 2nd. And my online party, I am hosting with summer parties by BelindaBossett.com. Begins on October the 1st. And we're going to have so much fun, ladies. Ladies only. And so get your email address to me so I can include you on the invite list. And, man, she's going to tell us about so much stuff and then so many goodies that she's going to share with us. So I'm excited to be hosting this online party. So she's going to be with us next Wednesday morning. And Fred, no circuits are tied up. And it's going to be a fun show. So it's been a minute too since she's been on the show. She hasn't been on since late spring. So it's going to be a super blast time. Oh, we have someone who wants to make a comment. And I hope my chat room door can open. Now, it couldn't open earlier. So, hello, Cousin Linda.
Hello, Cousin Bethany.
Hello, how are you doing?
Peachy Keen, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Happy and giddy talking with you all.
Where should we begin?
I know. Where should we begin?
Yeah, I had pulled up some information on Google about the five best cities for black dating. And Chicago is number one, and you've been talking about D.C., so that's number two. Number three is Houston. I'm amazed. I had no idea that Houston would be in the running. Atlanta. Yeah, I'm not surprised about Atlanta. And number five is San Diego. I'm shocked about San Diego. I haven't been there in about 30-something years. So I'm not familiar with San Diego because I don't know anybody who lives there anymore.
I have on and offline friends there, but I did not know it was a mecca for black singles.
I didn't either. I had no idea. I was shocked when I saw that one pop up. And then just,
know,
I guess, for what?
You go ahead. Go ahead. Just what?
Oh, okay. I was going to say, and I guess for other single women, you know, anybody, I would think North Dakota, and you mentioned Alaska.
Yeah.
And, because, you know, back in, I think, the 80s, they had all these men in Alaska who were looking for wives. They were making all that money on the while they were up there doing the Alaska pipeline thing. And
yes,
the same thing is happening in, I believe that's North Dakota. But
exactly,
like you mentioned, yeah, I don't think I could deal with the cold weather. I love cold weather, but I wouldn't want to live in that kind of climate.
I have a friend who went up to North Dakota to work, and
mm-hmm.
he's a friend that you know his parents. He went up there to work, get one of those high-paying jobs, and he literally fell
mm-hmm.
in love up there. And he's in a successful interracial relationship now. But he went up there to work, and he fell in love, and he stayed up there. And the pictures that he shared, oh, my God, it is freezing cold. So he must be in. I know the pay was good. That was a good reason to go up there. But he fell in love,
mm-hmm.
and he stayed in North Dakota.
Well, I think I'd make all the money I could make, and then me and my love would have to move to a warmer climate.
Look, we're going back down south, huh?
Oh, yeah, somewhere where it's warm or where they at least have a few months of cold. Because I think those kind of places, you know, they start getting cold weather probably like right about now.
Exactly. Exactly. Real early,
mm-hmm.
real cold.
And you know that 40 below and all that stuff. No, kid can't do that. Not.
I can even say 40 above, let alone 40 below.
Well, I can handle 40, but
uh-huh.
nothing below. It seems like, you know, the ground is just solid ice, and you've got, if your car is outside or your other vehicle, whatever kind of vehicle you have, if you don't have covered parking or something, you know, you've got to go out there and get all that ice and snow off and got to have chains on your tires. Nope, I need a little bit more convenience.
And not to mention the clothing, not regular clothing. Wow, the coat, the jacket.
You probably have to wear bear skins all the time.
Exactly. But you mentioned San Diego, and you know I'm a big lover of Patty Sanger, the millionaire matchmaker. And you know what? She always tells people, go to San Diego.
Mm.
And so that's kind of weird. You know, you said that's a good mecca for black singles. And she is, it's like anytime I hear her talk about where the singles are in California, she always say go to San Diego.
Well, here it says what they have going for them, weather, for real, I need to put my glasses on here, weather, for real this time, beautiful sunsets, year-round sports, a world-famous zoo. What doesn't San Diego have? And the city is especially perfect for single ladies. Black men outnumber black women, partly due to the nearby naval base. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I remember. I was thinking the naval base, but wow. Mm, so ladies, don't you military man.
And Beth, it says, lauded natives, your boyfriend, Reggie Bush.
Yes.
And Megan Good, whoever that is. Yeah, I thought, I don't know why.
I refer to him as my play brother nowadays, you know, since he's a father and all that.
Oh,
but
okay.
I know, so insexual, huh? but yeah, he's from San Diego playing for those Detroit Lions now.
And you know what? Now that I think back, even though it was 100 years ago, there were several black men that I met when I went to San Diego. I went out there to visit a girlfriend of mine, and she was quite popular with the gentleman. And I think I had a different date every night. Really, really nice men. I mean, I didn't know them from Adam. And they came by to visit her because she had told everybody I was coming to town. And I got to go to the famous San Diego Zoo and some nightclubs. And one of the guys that I went out with, who was actually from Jackson, Mississippi, and used to be my boyfriend in the first and second grade.
Oh, my God.
He and his family moved to San Diego when they were in the seventh grade. When we were in the seventh grade.
Uh-huh.
And so we lost contact with each other. And I'm saying boyfriend, you know how you have little baby crushes or whatever. And so when I went to visit my female friend in San Diego, she was saying that I'm going to take you by so we can visit Sammy. And I said, okay. And he remembered me and everything and came by and picked me up that night. And we went out and he took me to some real nice clubs and we just had a ball. And then we went to a place, it was on a ship. I think it was the Robert E. Lee or Reuben Lee. I think it was Robert E. Lee. And some guy there was a waiter who was very, very nice, and he came by the next day and took me out. And then I met somebody who played an instrument in a band, and he came and got me and took me out. Like I said, my friend had quite a few gentleman friends, but they were all very nice, perfect gentlemen.
And see, that's what's important, gentlemen.
I forgot all about San Diego. When you mention California, I usually think of Los Angeles or San Francisco.
Me too. Wow, so you have had this. Yeah, so you noticed that then, so it's still with gentlemen now.
The naval base, yeah.
Uh-huh. I was just saying, men of San Diego, you guys need to write a book.
I should write a book about that. Because I'm not telling everything that happened in San Diego, but it was nice.
You talking like it was Vegas. What happened in San Diego?
What happened in San Diego? Look, I can write a book and change the names. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Wow, that is amazing. Wow, you still in touch with that friend?
Well, not really, no.
Oh. Wow. But that's amazing that you, when you second thought about it, hey, I did have a nice experience.
Yeah, because I have a couple of pictures of me in San Diego. From back in the day, and I see your sister Beverly has started posting old pictures on Facebook.
Because I noticed on your page, and then I thought about it. I said, maybe I should post and tag some of your vacation pictures that I have.
You might as well, since your sister over there, Anthony Armstrong Jones, or whatever her name is, photographer, is posting everybody.
I know. I remember a few days ago when she found pictures and was trying to post them. Yeah, and then when I visited your page, I seen your pictures were posted or tagged on your page. And I have been thinking about it because I've been trying to think about, wow, how can I post some updated pictures or close to updated pictures of Cousin Linda on her page? Because whenever we're together, I planned on putting a profile picture up for you. But then I was like, wow, I have a lot of vacation pictures of you in Mexico and other places. And I was like, well, that, you know, so maybe I should tag some of your vacay pictures.
Yeah, like I said, you might as well. I guess the cat is out of the bag now. You know, I try to remain kind of private on Facebook because I watch so much TV, Who the Bleep Did I Marry and Stalking and whatever else comes on, Investigation Discovery, and it has me super skittish. And so that's why I had remained, why I had remained kind of anonymous, huh?
And when I get some friend requests, I'm like concerned. Like, is this a catfish? Is this a catfish profile? Like, is this really who you say you are?
And you know something else? So many people are worried about not giving out information online. You know, I want to protect my privacy. I said I gave up on that a long time ago. I had applied for this job and got hired, and in orientation, they were telling us how they no longer paid anybody to get information to do background searches and all that. And we were like, well, why? You know, and she's and the coordinator in the orientation class said, because everything is on the Internet. It's all free. So we were just so sure. Now, this has been about, I guess, maybe 7 or 8 years ago. And we were just so sure the girl was lying. It's like, no, it's nothing out there on me. Oh, no. And so she said, well, go to Google and type in your name and see what comes up. We were in a state of shock. Everybody, I think it was about 20 of us in the orientation. And everybody in that classroom had something on them in Google. And lo and behold, there were some pictures of me at Floods over on Bailey Avenue in Jackson, with alcohol. I had drinks in both hands. I said, oh, no, this is not me, not on Google. And the young lady that was sitting beside me, she was like, oh, I can't believe it.
Where did that picture come from? Like Floods
had it up on their
website?
I had posted my pictures on classmates.com. You remember classmates.com?
It's still popular.
Is it? Okay. I used to be heavy into classmates.com. And, well, see, they kind of changed their format and everything. I started getting information from folks that I never heard of and all across the country. I was pretty much interested in just people that I had gone to school with or people that I had worked with.
I'd like to know what's going on with my rival school friend.
Yeah, because I had Jim Hill and Brinkley. You know, I had connected with a bunch of folks from those schools. But, I mean, Ohio, New York, places that I had no dealings with those places. And they were sending me, you know, just a lot of unsolicited, unwanted information. And then the membership kept going up. And I just decided I wouldn't deal with classmates.com. But I had posted quite a few pictures on there. And I guess that's where Google got them from. But, I mean, I was just really embarrassed when I saw me at Floods. I think I had a drink in both hands.
And I do know how you are about your privacy. I mean, I'm a out there person, but I do like my privacy also. But I know how you are. I know you was in shock. Like, what?
Very much so.
Because they talk about those type of pictures. You know, but when people are celebrating with friends, I think, like, that's the normal thing.
Well, that's what I thought, but I just wasn't expecting it to pop up, at a place of employment.
Wow, so some people across the country, across the world, have lost their background check jobs because of social media.
Uh-huh, exactly. Because you can get a whole lot of information. People don't realize it. Sometimes you may have to pay $2 or $3, and this business about you can't find out who somebody is on that based on a cell phone number, that's not true because I keyed in some cell phone numbers and I got some information.
Important. Sound like the word to me.
And I remember in... Yeah, back in the 90s, when Google was getting really popular, Google Earth, and we were at work, and one of my friends had brought in some software from Google Earth, and he was telling us that it could zoom in on your address where you live, and so we just couldn't believe it. And we started typing in our addresses, and lo and behold, here comes all of your little information. And you know how you can zoom in on your address on your street?
Yes.
You can actually see whose car is in the driveway. You could almost get license plate numbers from the cars in the driveway. And so, you know, my mother had a private number for I don't know how many years. And so we couldn't pull up anything on her telephone number. But I put her address in, and lo and behold, there was Beacon Place all over the place, her name, everything. So when I called and told her about it, she got mad and started fussing. Well, I don't need my information on no doggone computer. I said, well, it's too bad because it's on there.
Wow. That reminds me of like the late 90s, and I was talking to one of my friends in California who's long-time married, one of those friends from here that I was talking about. And I remember she and I was on the phone, and her husband did that. And he was like, give me Bethany's address. And this was in the 90s. And he entered the address, and they described everything about the yard, the house, and everything to me. And they're in Los Angeles.
So, yeah, so, well, I mean, I'm in Texas, and so, you know, and you know, Texas has folks from all over the country, and we were all gathered around this friend's computer, and a friend of ours put his address in. He was from West Monroe, Louisiana, and everything about his house came up in Louisiana, and just everybody who wanted to come over, you know, and play around. But I was just really surprised when I put my mother's address in there, because we had started out using telephone numbers, and like I said, since her number was private, it wouldn't pull up anything. But now I don't think that if you've ever done anything anywhere, you know, swiped a credit card or a debit card, whatever, there is a little trail that follows you. And I've given up on trying to just really have total privacy, because like if you do surveys online or whatever, your information is out there, even though it has that HTTPS and all that stuff. There is a little, you're being tracked no matter what you
experts,
do. So I've kind of given up.
The experts always tell you, do the HTTPS, and that'll protect you. You know?
No, it won't. Mm-mm.
They even said that with your picture.
Maybe if you are, like, ordering something online or whatever, but I notice, because, you know, I shop online all the time, but I notice whatever I purchase, or even if I don't make a purchase, if I just go to a website, I start getting ads on, you know, when I'm looking at email or something. Here comes ads. It's like if I go to Neiman Marcus's website, because I get their Neiman Marcus Last Call email updates. And I might click on it, or, well, the next thing I know, there's about four or five ads for Neiman Marcus on my page. And if I just say, well, you know, Walmart, okay, next thing I know, here comes all these ads. I'm trying to read an article. Here comes all these ads from Walmart. And I say, you can't even look at anything without somebody knowing something. And you know, and all this spam comes in.
You used to have to sign up to receive information, but you don't anymore. So you're right. There's something going on. It's weird you mentioned back in the springtime, I was sent an app where you can read other people's like cell phone number, where you can read other people's text messages. You can read, like if I keyed in your number into my app, I read all of your text messages. I haven't put any. I don't want to invade anybody's privacy, but I was shocked at an app. I can't think of the name of it, but it's an app, and it might be still on my phone. I don't know, but I look. It's somewhere. Look, I'm like you. It's somewhere. But I Google it. I'm sure it'll come up. But I was like, I'm scared of that.
That's kind of dangerous.
Yes,
Remember?
And can it be traced? If you spying on somebody's text messages, can it be traced and they find out you spying on them?
And then you may find something that you don't want to find and just go temporarily insane. Remember back in the day when Star 67 was a big thing?
Yes. You take me back to the 80s. That was my teen years. We love our Star 67.
I never, ever used Star 67. Never, ever. And I do not be, I don't want to snoop on anybody, but I tell you what tickles me is people who have iPhones, and after they call you and hang up, and they think that's the end of it, because for some reason their phones will automatically dial you back, and you can hear everything they're saying in the background. And I'm thinking, I don't even have to play like I'm going to snoop, because I can hear everything that's going on.
Exactly. I had one of my T-Mobile Android phones was like that, and I could, like, be talking to you, and if someone calls me, it will automatically merge the call. And I'm like, that's not right. Or sometimes it would. I think I was talking to you a couple of times I was using that phone. I don't have it anymore.
Oh, Lord.
But it will automatically, like, when it ring, it'll just, automatically answer. Automatically, I'm on the phone. Somebody I want to talk to, you know, that's crazy right there.
Yeah, that's why we have all these divorces now, because you can't lie and say that's not true. That's just my friend. He's my cousin or whatever, because you can just pick up information without really trying.
And I'm not a snitch, but if you have a friend like me that love to video and take pictures. You up the creek. I feel for some people, husbands and wives, but they have a friend like me who don't mind telling it. They're in trouble. Because I'll snap a video in a second. I almost got in trouble with Homeland Security back in May, cousin mother, because I was taking pictures down at the station here in Jackson. Yeah, when they said I could get arrested. You talking about I didn't. I grew up and put that camera up.
Taking pictures where?
I didn't know. It down at the Union Station where Amtrak and the buses, Greyhound, and where J-Tran.
You can't take pictures there?
Yeah, Homeland Security was down there. And they were, I guess, bomb threats had happened in the city. Or they were doing a drill. But there's rumors that a bomb threat had happened. And so I didn't know if it was, like, something involving drugs or what. So, you know, I'm a proud American. You're not both, you know. And so I was just super excited. I'm in Jackson. If I was in Dallas, that's something normal to see. Seeing Homeland Security, all different departments of law enforcement, from local to national, surrounding the place. And so I got so happy and proud, and I just started videoing and taking pictures. And then one of these big Mississippi Bureau of Narcotic guys came to me. He said, if you don't put that phone down, I'm going to arrest you. And he was serious. And I was putting the phone down. He said, I was taking the pictures. He said, did you hear me? I will arrest you. I thought I was going to have to call Jay, like, ASAP. I'm like, I'm just a proud American. I was like, he was like, don't. He told me, he said, you better not post anything. And I said, well, can I post a picture? If you look at my album, I have like a picture of a sign about Homeland Security. The only thing I could post was a Homeland Security poster that they had on the wall. And because I'm like, okay, because I don't want to get arrested and be just because I'm happy and proud. He was like, but I see what he meant, because I'm putting them on camera and. But I'm sure the other people were doing it too. They had like checkpoints everywhere. It was from JPD to highway guys to Homeland Security, the NARC guys. And I didn't know if it was a drug bug. I didn't know what was going on, but it was spooky. But I was excited. I'm like, whoa, what is this going on in Jackson? Looked like a scene from CSI Miami, you know? And that's all I was thinking.
Yeah, you're not cute.
But I guess it could have been terrorists, or it could have been something really serious going on. So I guess
I hope. I hope it wasn't terrorists because they've gotten desperate if they come to Jackson.
And guess what? He said, he shared to me, he was like, he didn't go into detail exactly what was going on, but he was like, guess what? Jackson is a prime target for terrorists. So he was giving me a hint of what was going on. He said, Jackson is a prime location. He said, because Jackson is a place where you witness state terrorism. And he said, Yeah, he said that is. He said Jackson is a prime target, and I was like, "What?" And he was like, "Yes, you know." Because I'm thinking, okay, this is like, you know, I know this is like a channel for drugs, you know, right here, really putting everybody transporting. But he was like, "This is the prime location for terrorism, and so we have to do these drills." I think it was a real thing, but that's a good point you make about. Taking pictures and filming and all that.
Well, I certainly didn't think that Jackson would be a prime target for terrorists, but I guess he's right because that's one of the last places you would expect.
Exactly, and I think he mentioned like what happened. Well, I guess he was talking domestic terrorism, like what happened last week, and international terrorism. He was like, "This is a prime location." You know, so people like look at Newtown. You know, he was like mentioned like places that you wouldn't expect mass killings and bombings to happen. Like, wow.
You know, the terrorists have just ruined everything for just regular everyday people. Because I was fortunate enough to travel back in the day when you just walk up to the counter at the airport and say you want a ticket and you write a check. You know, you didn't have to have any ID and all that stuff. And actually, back then, you could call and get an airline ticket without a credit card number. They'd mail the ticket to your house. You fly where you want to fly, and you pay for the ticket when you get back home. And, you know, none of this searching stuff.
I fly domestically before all this stuff happened. And I'm like, when I start back flying, golly, this procedure that you have to go through.
Yeah, and having to be there 3 and 4 hours ahead of time at the airport and disrobing and pat-downs. And then they still miss a lot of stuff. That's what gets me. I mean, I'm glad they're doing it, but it's not fail-safe. And I'm not criticizing the TSA, but it seems like they're missing quite a few weapons that get through those scanning machines, you know.
Wow.
But, are we off the subject? This is supposed to be Affairs of the Heart night.
Yes, but this is lovers and potential lovers want to make sure they're safe too when they're traveling. So,
I guess that's Affairs of the Heart.
And we had another caller also listening. So if you want to make a comment, please do. Wow, exactly. Yeah, because I was going to talk about when you're a happy single, because I had been sharing what happy couples talk about. And, to be honest, most single people I know are happy. It's like some people think single people aren't happy.
Yeah, most single people are single by choice. And you have a lot of freedom. Even the TV ministers talk about how you don't have to ask anybody, can you, you know, come to something like these church gatherings or what do you call them, when the church folks have conferences, I guess, or whatever. As a single person, if you want to go, you go. And I was just amazed that I hadn't been married in so long until I don't think about things, how if you want to go, you know, to these church conferences or whatever, get-togethers, how you would have to ask a spouse because a lot of times the woman wants to go and the man doesn't. Or can I spend some money or can I go out with the girls or whatever? And I just took for granted that when you're an adult, you don't have to ask, but that really isn't the case. You know, marriage is a two-way street. And so, because, you know, I'm sure the wife doesn't want the husband just up and doing whatever it is he wants to do without, for lack of a better word, permission. But, yeah, things that we just take for granted, because if I want to go to lunch and spend $45 on my lunch, I don't have to feel guilty. And if I want to go buy a $200 dress, I don't have to hide it in my closet. And
exactly.
Even when I was married, I didn't have to do that when I was married, but I worked with these women who had to account for a $2 bottle of nail polish. And I was like, well, y'all are working, you know, working full time, so why do you have to be concerned about buying something as simple as nail polish? And they couldn't eat out for lunch, because I used to go to lunch, you know, eat out at a restaurant every day. And these women were brown bagging it, and I just felt like, well, now, if I'm working, I should be able to do what I want to do with my money.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's not always the case.
Your lunch hour, and eat nourishing meals during your lunch hour.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the duty of a wife when you're off work.
Yeah, but...
Wow. That's a good point, because you and I both work with your customer service and both work in retail, and that amazed me with some customers that I had to deal with, especially when I worked in ladies' departments at certain stores, and the women would, like, hide their clothes, and then sometimes you would wonder, well, why is this person a shopaholic? But sometimes women would be shopaholics because of their marriage. Because
mm-hmm.
they would buy clothes up, and they would uphold a certain image, but they had a certain budget, and then they would keep the tags on their clothes. Then they would bring the clothes. Now, this is matters of the heart topic we're talking about. we're back on the topic of matters of the heart. And would bring their clothes back with the tags on it, and, you know, want to exchange and return stuff. And you know that's a no-no. But
mm-hmm.
if they kept the tags on and did their best to keep it well-preserved, you know, we would have no choice but to accept that. But so many women are shopaholics for that reason, because of their marriages and can't spend certain amounts of money. And a lot of times that's weird that you say that. A lot of times it's not housewives. It's working women.
Mm-hmm. I always felt like if I was working, housewives, because they are on limited budgets.
But if you're working... That's a good point you mentioned. Because thinking about mm-hmm. it, I think more working women, and I'm talking about not just like corporate women, would be,
mm-hmm.
and I guess that's what you're talking about. They would be like, oh my God, I can't spend this, I can't do this. I'd be deducting and doing the math of how they're trying to stay in budget.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I had a supervisor who used to count pennies and couldn't spend and brown bagged it and all that. Oh, husband didn't do anything. She was
wow.
the one that was really footing the bills. She was earning the money, but she was
yeah.
afraid to spend it. I
wow,
said,
that's
ain't
weird.
No way.
Exactly. That was salesperson. I used to, be really concerned about those type of shoppers, because if they're working in corporate America or they're managers or whatever, they need their certain type of attire. Or so need to be dressed
mm-hmm.
a certain way to uphold their image, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And well,
mm-hmm.
It's weird you bring that up, because I'm thinking back to the way I would think as a salesperson when I would see those women, and I'm thinking, when you're making big time money, have your own money, I'm thinking to myself, why?
mm-hmm.
You know, even why? Wow, that's wild.
Yeah, I just can't begin to understand anything like that. And I don't think it has anything to do with my being single all these years. It's just something that just doesn't mesh in my mind. If I'm working 40 hours a week, 20 hours a week, or whatever, and contributing to the household, I just think I should be able to have some money set aside for me to do what I want to do. Excuse me. But, like I said, I work with these women who were afraid to spend $2 on nail polish.
Yeah. Wow. I know one of my male friends, I tried to give him an Avon book, because I know he talked about what nice things he and his wife like, and I'm like, well, I was like, take this book to your wife. He was like, and I'll have to pay for it. He was like, she have her own money, but she'll have me paying for it. I'm not taking her that book.
mm. Well, he should have been glad to pay for her Avon.
Exactly. I was like, you wouldn't do me like that. He was like, yeah, she, you know, she have her own money, but he was like, she'll be looking at me to pay for it. I'm not taking her that much.
Well, and she's right. I agree with her.
She was not joking. I thought he was joking, but he was serious. So wow, I guess he figured she'll say, well, it's from your friend, so you pay for it.
Wow. But I had a friend, she and I used to talk on the phone all the time. Now, we were good friends in high school and college, and so when she got married, I understand when people get married, they can't hang out with you and talk on the phone and stuff like they used to, but this was the craziest thing.
I'm glad you transitioned into the topic because it's the next topic, and I was wondering if we were going to have time to talk about that. If you look on the description of the show at the end, I want us to talk about other relationships between singles and married couples, or like when our friends get married, you know? So
yeah.
I'm glad you're transitioning into that right on time.
Oh, well, good. Well, anyway, now she still pursued the friendship between me and her, but she let me know that when her husband was at home, she couldn't talk on the phone. I said, fine, no problem, I understand. But I couldn't understand why this fear factor thing. She and I would be on the phone, and she'd say, now, if blah, 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 you know, I won't call her husband's name, we'll just call him Mr. X. If Mr. X comes home, I'm going to have to hang up. I said, okay. And she, like I said, she would call me, and we'd be talking, you know, we may have been talking 35, 40 minutes. Next thing I know, I hear click. I guess so-and-so came home. Now, I don't understand this, because when I was married, I could talk on the phone. Even though my husband was at home, I could still talk on the phone. But, you know, I didn't get, why can't you talk on the phone? Oh, why can't you say, well, Linda, so-and-so has come home, and girl, I'm going to have to get off the phone. It was just click, hang up in my face.
She told us she was cheating. She was talking to you.
It was the weirdest thing. They're divorced, you know, and I don't know what happened in the relationship. It was kind of volatile. But, it was just strange to me. You know, you got to hang up on a person. And like I said, it's not like I called her. She called me. And she'd come by my apartment and all that, and then she'd have to Zoom home before he got home. I said, I don't understand this. Why are you going to be married if you got to live in fear like that? And what's the reason behind it?
Exactly. That is a good point. Exactly. If you're in fear, my goodness.
Didn't the person that you married know that you had friends? And what's so killing? I knew her husband, so to this day, I don't know why we couldn't talk.
I was just, my two marriages was kind of, you know, guys that were kind of controlling, but those controlling guys did allow me to talk on the phone. You know, I would call you, you know, they did allow me to talk on the phone. But that is wild. That is wild, both of my marriages were controlling people, but I could talk on the phone. Wow.
Well,
I
don't understand that.
That is crazy, because you're not talking to another, like, cheating. And you can say, well,
exactly.
I'm talking to Linda. Okay, Linda, my husband's here. I need to go.
Right. And I was understanding, and like I said, and her husband and I knew each other. We had all gone to the same school.
And that kind of behavior, and sometimes people have a reason to act that way, but then sometimes people don't have a reason to act that way. And that's what makes people suspicious. When people act that way, don't have a reason to. He noticed her body language. Like, why are you acting like that? Who are you talking to?
Exactly. And I, you know, if she had told him it was me, I didn't want him to think that I was trying to set her up with somebody or whatever. Because, you know, people used to say, well, I don't want my spouse hanging out with a single person because they'll be trying to hook you up with so-and-so. I ain't got to try to hook nobody up with nothing. Now, I did not allow people to come to my place if they were married and wanted to bring some other person by there because I'm like, no, I don't do that.
Exactly.
You know, you take that somewhere else.
Yeah.
You're not going to disrespect my home.
Exactly. That's good. I know a lot of listeners, you get a lot of amens on that. Bring your spouse. Don't bring somebody else, outside person or somebody else's spouse.
Right. Now, if you're going to be going with somebody else's husband, wife, or whatever, y'all need to go on to wherever you were going, but you're not coming to my place.
Exactly. That's too much drama. Wow. Yeah, because I talk to, like male friends and female friends. I know some of my single guy friends, they talk about how when they, you know, it's like call their married friends and you try to, that could be just talking about like a game. And their friends, like, freeze up. I can't talk now. A lot of my single friends have me cracking up. They're like, I talked to so-and-so, and I was just talking about, like, something innocent, like a game. And it's like, exactly what you just said about your female friend. Guys do the same thing. I hang up and say, I can't talk now.
And I have married guy friends who I'm so glad their wives know that I'm not the least bit interested in them.
Exactly.
I mean, you couldn't give them to me.
Exactly. Big shout out to my married friends, especially my guy friends whose wives know this is a platonic friend. You know, wow. Even guys that I might have dated before, you're in the past. They know they're in the past, but we're not interested in one another. You know. People friendly people.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm still friends with my ex-husband. We have a very good relationship. And ex-boyfriends, you know, ain't no point in hating each other just because the relationship didn't work out. Don't mean we got to be enemies.
Exactly. Now, those people
that
you can't help
doesn't mean, you know, yeah, and, you know, like I said, that doesn't mean that we have to be enemies, and it doesn't mean that we have to try to be lovers again or anything.
Because a lot of times, other people talk about, well, we're better friends now than we were when we were together. I hear a lot of people say that. And I know some of my exes or former lovers, you know, we're like buds, not interested at all in one of them. I can't think of anybody I'll go back to, you know. And the one person I would say, he's not alive, probably. You know, the one person I would think about. You know, so there's nobody that I would like. And I'm so happy and proud of, like, the ones that are in happy marriages or happy single or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
come out the closet. All of them.
Lord,
if you're happy at home.
I hope nobody that I dated was in the closet. That would be horrible.
No, I hope that too, Cousin Linda, but you never know.
That is very true. That is very true.
I hope so too. I can't point anybody out, but I know they got this.
Yeah, them down low folks.
Oh, man. Don't get some of my friend girls started on the down low. Some guys, too, on the down low people. But we're not here to out anybody, so don't you all worry.
No, because, I mean, if whatever way folks want to go, I don't care. You know, just if it's a man, please tell me you go that way so I won't be looking at you romantically.
Those are my thoughts, too, Cousin Linda. At least tell me, hey, I am, like, come on, tell me, I'm bi. You know, give me the choice.
Yeah, because some women don't mind dating bisexual men or gay men or whatever.
Exactly. I was watching a Real Housewives of Atlanta, and Kenya Moore, as beautiful as she is, I was so shocked when I heard the words come out of her mouth that the past 6 months, most of the guys that she had dated were gay. Well, on the down low. And as beautiful as she is, former Miss USA, And they're in Atlanta, but Atlanta's not on the top of the gate Mecca anymore.
Well, it's pretty high up there.
Yeah. Don't get one of my friends who own a barbershop that's from here started, because he's a straight guy. He's one of those real hardcore straight guys. And don't get him started talking about the gay guys
My first time to Atlanta, I'll never forget, was in 1968. And I was surprised at the gay scene there. They had a big gay community in Atlanta going way back then.
Even in 68, the year I was born?
Huh?
Even in 68,
in 1968, that was the year you were born?
Yes. They were
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yes, ma'am. My girlfriend took me down somewhere off of Peachtree Street to where they hung out, because, you know, that was real unusual back then. Now, if you were at Jackson State College, Jackson State was known to have a huge gay population.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't know anything like that about Atlanta. And my friend took me, like it's been so long ago, I can't remember what area it was, but it seemed like it was somewhere off Peachtree Street. Mm-hmm.
I know in the 90s, number one, I mean, Atlanta was like the top, and San Francisco and Atlanta and New York were like the top places.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, even I growing up, even though I'm heterosexual, I've grown up just loving and supporting the LGBT community, supports me. And it's just that, believe it or not, Mississippi, well, you know, because you just talked about Jackson State College. But I've been exposed to that to the LGBT community my entire life. And it's so supportive.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people wouldn't believe that Mississippi has, you know, there were a lot of lesbians and gays, and, you know. So it's kind of weird you mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I had a lot of gay friends back in the 80s. Yeah. A lot of them died, but working in retail,
exactly.
Yeah, I had quite a few gay male friends.
Exactly. I remember being a teenager in the 80s, and I remember the preteen when the AIDS epidemic happened. And then when I was working in the Metro with my boss, who's still my friend and confidant, I talk about all the time with you, Sandra, who, you know, openly, she's married. She recently married a doctor. She tickles me because her mother passed away a couple years ago, and she always said, my mom always wanted me to marry a doctor. But didn't know it was the same sex doctor. So she did marry a doctor like her mom always wanted her to. And, you know, not a male doctor, but, you know, a same sex doctor. And so she tickled me when she said that. And but I remember, like, customers and people that worked in retail, you would see them, and then all of a sudden they were, like, lost weight. They would be sick. And then next thing you know, you hear that person pass away. That was so heartbreaking. And I'm glad you mentioned it, because you lost so many things. When I was a teenager, preteen, and trying to grasp, what is this AIDS and HIV? What is this about? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of weird, because when that first came out, we was being told it was a white gay man's disease. And it was like,
yeah,
wow,
and then everybody. And they were saying that, you know, it came from Africa.
Africa, yeah, we were hearing that. Two stories.
You know, to this day, I still don't really believe what they're telling us, because I've read so much stuff online that says it was created in a laboratory.
Exactly.
And I really believe that. I believe that.
Because, I heard that third story, too. Yeah.
You know, like, comedian Dick Gregory had said that he didn't believe it was a homosexual disease either, because homosexuals had been having the same kind of sex for years and years and years, and there was no HIV/AIDS.
And since the beginning of time, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Heterosexuals getting the same thing heterosexuals are getting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just kind of think that was something that they unleashed on society, like drugs, you know, crack and all that.
Wow, that's a good point, because I used to hear also that that America didn't really want to have a war on drugs, that it was all propaganda, and that America really was in the drug business. So that's kind of weird.
Amen.
To bring that up. And you know me being a patriotic, you always have to bring me down, you know, to look at reality. And I, when I would hear these stories, I'm like, no way. No.
You know, well, you know, I'm really into old television. I love old TV shows. And I look at The Untouchables, number one, because I love Robert Stack. But if they can get rid of Al Capone, Frank Nitti, Legs Diamond, all these other gangsters, don't you know they could get rid of these the gang members and the drug dealers, and what our government could do whatever it wanted to do. This business about we got to try to fight drugs and just say no to drugs. If we wanted to eliminate drugs, illegal drugs in this country, we could.
Wow.
But there's too many people making bukus of dollars off of them.
Yeah, because I was listening to one of those late night shows. You know, I know you like listen to those middle of the night, like East, coast to coast. And I know a couple months ago I was listening. Those middle of the night, late night talk radio. And this caller, how was that man's name? Ooh, it's a show I love to listen to. But he talked about some really deep topics. And I know a caller called in and said, he said the same thing you just said. And he said that there are programs out there where law enforcement, I hope we don't get in trouble talking about this, I heard it on talk radio. He said there are programs out there where law enforcement supposed to meet quotas getting drug dealers and getting drugs. And he said that we'll never see the end of drugs because different programs get funding based on, you know, on the drugs that they confiscate and the people that they arrest. And I was like, wow.
And
you know,
I was
like,
all the drugs. Well, you know, all the drugs that they confiscate and all that money that they confiscate. Now, what happens to that? I know supposedly, you know, that's evidence in court or what have you, but then once the trial is over and they're either convicted or acquitted, what happens to the contraband and the money?
And what happens to the weapons? Exactly. Well, we talk about our war against also, and we all know that many of our law enforcement officers can't carry the weapons that the criminals carry.
And
Chicago, and you know, you see where we have a war in Chicago. And one of my friends who is in law enforcement in Chicago, in recent years was just allowed a certain type of rifle, you know, but still nothing compared to what the criminals have.
Right, because for the longest, you know, they were using those little .38 specials, and I was glad when law enforcement was able to get some bigger firepower. But we pass laws in this country to do whatever we want to do. Look at Mississippi with open carry. So if you can get stuff like that through, you could give law enforcement the kind of firepower they need to do the job, to get rid of the criminals and the drugs and whatever else. So to me, it's just the way that some people want it, and that's just the way it's going to be, no matter what me and you, you know, John Q. Citizen, whatever we think.
Exactly. And then we have to be careful. It's weird, too. We have to be careful what we voice. Like, okay. Jane or Joe might, you can't say that. You can't do that. You can't voice that.
No, I'm just amazed at all the things that are permitted now.
I know. And you Major Evers and was a part of the civil rights movement. I feel you. I'm like, what is Cousin Linda thinking? what is going on now? You know,
it makes you want to cry.
Ooh. I'm like, Lord, Hammer.
It really makes you want to cry because it seems like all your effort was in vain, just for nothing.
Yeah. I love watching the 50th anniversary of the march a few weeks ago. It's just amazing, people of all colors just out there, you know, these people are still confused as to us doing what's right.
The country then was divided among racial lines, and it's still divided among racial lines. And to me, it's worse today than it was 50 years ago because so much of the hatred is hidden. Back then, you knew where people were coming from. Now, you know, you may be sitting down with your coworker who you think is your friend, and behind closed doors, you know, they might want to blow your head off. So, and you know, I don't think that we black people are in the condition that we're in by accident. I think a lot of this that has happened to us was planned because we couldn't get these weapons unless somebody wanted us to get them. We couldn't get these drugs unless somebody wanted us to get them.
Now you sound like Dick Gregory. Dick Gregory, like we're not the ones that own and the planes and all of this.
And the boats and all this other stuff. It to me, it's a way of committing genocide.
Yeah, when you mentioned that's what you made me think about. I mean, that worldwide genocide, and that was created. That is sad. But back to what you're saying about the genocide, the drugs are just a separation of keeping people divided.
Well, it's a way of eliminating a certain group of people.
Mr. Everett said to hold that thought. Mr. Everett said earlier tonight on his radio show. Do you ever listen to his show? Let's Talk on WMPR.com.
I always forget it. Tonight
he had said. He said, because, you know, he'll talk about the bigots and the racism, but then he said, some of you black people who are just, are prejudiced are just because somebody's white. He said, now you ain't no better than some of those other bigots.
That's
you know,
true.
He said, black and white people, especially in Mississippi, he said, we need each other, and y'all know that. That was his word tonight. I was like, whoa.
That's true.
He was like, we need each other, and you know this. You think we need to see more interracial business, you know, coming together and all that, like you and I always talk about.
Yeah, we need to stop hating each other, and I don't know how that will ever change.
Yeah.
You would think after 50 years that would have been weeded out, but it's as prevalent now as it was then. And like I said, it seems more so to me.
Wow. I definitely need to get out more and travel more. But one of my friends that live in Chicago, they also mentioned to me how just what you had said, they said that Chicago is really racist. And I could not believe that because I thought it was like, you know, so many cultures there.
I don't know why.
And they were like, well, the cultures are segregated. You know, the different cultures, different nationalities have their own little section. You know?
Do you remember Lou Rawls? The singer Lou Rawls?
Yes.
Okay, he was talking about how he couldn't wait to leave Chicago. And when he left, I think he was living in Las Vegas, and he was saying how his friends had told him, you know, I guess this was around the late 70s, man, you need to come on back to Chicago. They let us live on Lakeshore Drive now. And he was saying he didn't care where they let him live. You know, he wasn't coming back to live in Chicago. And when Oprah first went to Chicago, I was surprised that she said this on her TV show. She said Chicago is a very racist city. And a lot of black civil rights leaders used to say that Chicago was about the most racist, most segregated city in the country.
Wow. I've only been to Chicago a couple of times. Since so many Southerners migrated to Chicago back in the day, But I see a lot of people are coming right back to Mississippi, to the Deep South, if they came from the South.
When black people used to go to Chicago, they didn't tell you that they were in a segregated neighborhood. I remember back when I was in the 7th grade, one of my classmates told me, she said, you know, if a colored person moved into a white neighborhood, she said, next thing you know, the white people are moving out. And
wow.
The same thing happened, you know, when we got desegregation and integration in the South. Well, I mean, look at your own neighborhood. You see where that, you know, that used to be a predominantly, or once upon a time, probably exclusively white neighborhood.
But the neighborhood and it's died in Jackson right now. When we first lived in this neighborhood, it was predominantly white. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You should. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, they just pack up and move.
And even some blacks. Pack up and I'm out of here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm out of here, you know, because of taxes and all that. Wow.
No, a lot of times people move because of the color or race or ethnicity of the people that move in.
And
I mean, that's
status.
Their preference. I ain't mad at them if that's
and
the
then,
way they want to be. I mean,
and then if they're black, sometimes it's because of the status. Where if I move to this certain type of area, then that will, like, upgrade my status level. Wow. That's something, because the story of Prince. Well, they need to make a biopic about Prince. His parents are from really Louisiana. And instead of going to Chicago, they went to Minneapolis. And there are stories that are shared about Prince and his sister when they were young kids. How when they moved to growing up in Minneapolis, they experienced segregation like it was nothing. I mean, up in Minneapolis. I'm like, wow. You know, his parents moved to Minneapolis so they could have a better life. And then their kids were, you know, they had to experience segregation too. See, Prince don't ever talk about, like, his upbringing and his childhood. But in the books and stories that he and his sister, they share those, like, stories of people that grew up with them. They share those stories about how they experienced segregation and how they was treated bad by, you know, whites and stuff.
Yeah, for some strange reason, a lot of black people like to believe that when they move north, that everything was going to be hunky-dory. It's going to be really nice. White people up there aren't prejudiced. They don't discriminate against black people like like they do in the South. And I tell people, I said, well, now, some of the worst discrimination I experienced was in Detroit, Michigan, Chicago, Illinois, and Long Beach, California. Way worse than...
The one time I went to California, that's where I went, Long Beach, visiting my friends in Long Beach. Long Beach? Mm-hmm. Long Beach seems so diverse.
Well, it may be now, but back when I went during the 70s, I went to all three of those places in the 70s, and you would have thought you were in the South somewhere, the deep, deep South.
Wow, so that's why in the 80s when I would meet my friends from California and they would be in Mississippi, they would just love interacting with different races. I didn't know that they were experiencing crazy stuff in California. I thought California was like the, you know,
I did too, because I used to watch American Bandstand, so I thought everything was hunky-dory.
So I'm understanding why so, like, people love to send, you mentioned Jackson State, people love to send their kids to Jackson State and Belhaven and Ole Miss now and Mississippi State so they can mix in and blend with and be exposed to different cultures and different races. So, So that is something. And some people probably say, what is this about matters of the heart? But this is, we're talking about the topic of love and how people need to spread love and get along better.
Yeah, because it doesn't just have to be romantic love. Love for your fellow man, humanity.
Exactly. Wow. Because I notice when people are from other cities and other states and they come down here, it's like different. That's why I think people should visit the Deep South and especially Mississippi at at least once to see. And, you know, and people probably think, and they have their own thoughts, and listening to, you know, your story can make people, like just, man, you talk about your experience alone working with Mega Evers. I mean, did you see the Butler?
No, I haven't seen the Butler.
Okay. You need to see the Butler. And Oprah, she's going to win an award, I believe. She's
you
gonna
think
win
Oprah's
going
to get... You?
I thought it was joking. You know, I didn't believe it when people said Oprah's going to did an Oscar award. The whole movie's going to win awards. But I thought people were joking when they said Oprah, that was an Oscar-winning performance. That's all. I was like, Oprah, that was no Oscar-winning performance. She hadn't acted in 15 years since The Beloved. Mm. You know? And I'm like, no way.
And I can stand Beloved.
Oh, my God. That woman was crazy in that film. But that film, it took me through so many emotions. And it's a good film.
Well, I may
film.
Have to go see it. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it's probably going to inspire you. I could see you writing a book and a film based on your experience working with Mega Evers. Because that was about the Butler. And then just, imagine, you know, we need to know that story. Some people probably were saying, well, I want to know her story, because some people didn't hear when you used to share with us your story of working while you've been a soldier in the Civil Rights Movement. But a lot of us didn't know that. The story.
I'm telling you, if they knew what we went through
you
to get our so-called rights.
Yeah, you all seen those footages where people in Jackson, Mississippi were locked up and thrown in garbage trucks and taken downtown. Cousin Linda was part of that. She literally was locked up.
I wrote a comment on, I think it was something on the Griot website, where people just don't realize what happened. They seem to think that what you see, even the actual footage, is over-dramatization. And I had to tell them, no, this is what actually happened, and you're only seeing the tip of the iceberg. Because I remember when we were demonstrating in Jackson, we were going to have a march downtown on Capitol Street, and the mayor at the time was Alan C. Thompson. The airport used to be named for him before it became Medgar Evers International Airport. It was Alan C. Thompson Field. And that mayor issued a warning, said any demonstrators out there on Capitol Street were to be shot on sight and shoot to kill.
Mind you, how old were you, Cousin Linda? I think you were preteen.
14.
So they would have shot a 14-year-old.
And, well, there were children out there younger than I was.
Lord,
we had kids out there. Mm-hmm. And he had what they call Thompson's tank. You know, like they were using in World War II tanks to kill Nazi Germans. Thompson's tank. Now, here we were armed with nothing other than ourselves, defenseless people, no weapons, no nothing. And they had billy clubs, they had guns, they had dogs and fire hoses, and he had Thompson's tank with orders to shoot to kill. Now, there was one time that we did not demonstrate.
What you're describing does sound like you're talking about Syria in present day. What you're describing
Beirut.
To us again sound like Syria today. And then what happened?
Well, we didn't demonstrate because we knew that was not a threat. That would have been carried out. Because my mama told me that. Now, that was the one time my mother had told me. Huh?
Don't go. That's one that time on Helen said,
don't
go to
them. Don't do that. And nobody went.
Do you think he was bluffing?
No. No, he was not bluffing.
I'm a history buff, but that's something I need to do my homework on. You lived it. Whoa. That is, you about to make me cry. Wow.
The rights that we have, and I call them so-called rights, I view them more as privileges than rights, because to me we don't have any rights. But yeah, we fought and earned that. And the sad thing is, those of us who were out there actively participating in that, we didn't really get the glory and all the bonuses and prestige that the younger generation, you know, is afforded.
Exactly. Like I, that was born in 68, I have no inkling of what segregation, like you were saying, openly feels like. Openly. Now, like you were saying, it happened violently. I'm not that naive. It happens. I know racism and prejudice and all that happens, but openly, I was born right after you guys did all this and it was still going on. And I'm in Mama's stomach when Martin Luther King and, you know, Kennedy both assassinated, you know? And Jack Kennedy? Was it Jack Kennedy that was assassinated in 68, too?
Robert. Oh, you mean President John F. Kennedy? Yeah, they called him Jack, and then his brother Robert.
Yes, 68. He and
President Kennedy got killed in 63. Robert Kennedy and Dr. King, 68. A lot of people thought that President Kennedy liked black people. And in the beginning, maybe later on, after they started showing what was going on in the South, what we were experiencing, but prior to that, I don't think he gave a thought one way or the other about black people.
That's another reason to go see The Butler, because they showed, like, the different presidents. And when they were going through the Civil Rights Movement, the Butler's son was a freedom writer. And the president was keeping the Butler updated on what was going on with the freedom writers.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked in the White House. And his son, I won't go into details because you want to see the movie and see for yourself. But his friends used to say, well, your dad works in the White House, can't he say something? You know, but that's a good point you mentioned that, because White House.
They say the movie is based on the Butler thing. It's not an actual true story nor a documentary, so a lot of that's probably fiction. Of course, I have no clue as to what went on, but I do remember where they interviewed the guy, I think the story that was based on before he died, I guess it was President Kennedy who didn't want them. It was something that, I think the Butlers wanted a raise, and the president would not agree to it. Huh? And they decided that they would strike, because some state dinner was coming up, and the Butlers had decided to strike. Mm-hmm. But, I didn't get the impression that President Kennedy liked black folks. I don't think any white people really liked black folks or loved us or whatever, other than the ones who participated in the Civil Rights Movement, because there were a lot of white people who did participate in the Civil Rights Movement. Reverend King from up at Tougaloo, Mississippi, it was just awful the way he was beaten, and his face, his mouth especially, became disfigured because he had been beaten and kicked in the mouth so many times for marching and demonstrating and sit-ins and stuff. And some of, you know, the Freedom Riders were white. The guys that came down from New York, Schwerner and Goodman,
mm-hmm.
you know, that came down, that were killed in Philadelphia, Mississippi. So there were a lot of white people who helped us.
Those of you that wonder what she's talking about, remember the movie Mississippi Burning? That story was...
I saw that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That was the story of their killing. Wow. Mm-hmm. Not to mention Jacksonville. And that what kills me. Jackson should be the last place where black-on-black crime should be happening, with the way mm-hmm. people marched here, and then with the way Megan Evers was killed, like worse than a hunter killing an animal in the woods,
mm-hmm.
you know, right here in Jackson. I mean, this would be the last place people, black on black crime should be happening. But back to what Dick Gregory had said in this speech I had seen him in the late 90s here in Jackson, he said where it's black on black crime, it's white on white, it's Hispanic on Hispanic. You know, none of it's right. You know, they kill where they live. You know, that's what he was like, well, you know, the blacks kill each other and the whites kill each other. And that's so true, even
but,
here.
But there was,
white on white
crime.
Like, it's nobody's business.
Yeah, and that's I think Reverend Al Sharpton might have mentioned that. You know, why don't they call it white on white crime? When but see, it's a lot of things that are psychological that we overlook.
Yeah.
And once upon a time, black people did not do this. I mean, we act like some wild animals, and animals act on instinct. They don't know what they're doing. We have brains where we can think. And there was a time when black people valued life. We loved each other. Because, see, when I was coming up, we always spoke. You know, when you passed by a person, you spoke to them, whether you knew them or not. And if you were at the lunch counter in Woolworths, if there was one person sitting in a booth and there was nowhere else for somebody to sit, and it may have been some other booths available, but a black person would see a black person sitting there and they just come over and join, and that was normal. You just did that, and you sat there and had a wonderful conversation. You might have gained a friend or whatever, but we used to kind of just flock to each other and look out for each other and things of that nature. But it seems like now we're some of our own worst enemies.
Yeah, because like you were saying, of the people that came, the generations that came behind you, and I wasn't too far behind, but I always seem like, I tell people, I'm like, you know, I grew up in a multicultural Mississippi. And some people might think, oh, well, she's not telling the truth. Yes, I did. And then you started off with me at a young age, teaching me how to be a lady and how to eat properly and how to carry myself in a decent manner. And so I'm like, okay. I know I'm just in disbelief, too, because of how things are. You know, we all are human and have our wild sides, but there's a way to act, too, and be civilized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a time when we wouldn't even think about harming somebody like that. Now, I'm not going to say that we didn't commit crimes against each other, but this old Wild West mentality, drive-by shootings, just killing folks just to be killing, no. We just didn't do that.
And I've asked you this question off the record before. What happened to the Black Power era? I remember the early 70s when I was like 3, 4, 5, as a little girl in the early 70s, and when some things were going on at Jackson State campus. And I remember in Jackson and worldwide on national TV watching Soul Train and other programs. I remember Black Love and
mm-hmm.
Black Pride, and we had our Afro Sheen. You know,
and what happened to I'm Black and I'm Proud?
Exactly.
Now,
that's a good point. When I was working at Mr. Evers' radio station back in the 90s, I played this James Brown song, I'm Black and I'm Proud. Do you know Mr. Evers called me? And he said, what are you doing? Why are you playing that song? And this was in 93.
He didn't want you to play it?
He was like, what you doing playing that song?
I guess you might have been offending somebody.
He was glad to hear me playing it, but he was like, oh my God, I can't believe you're playing it.
Oh, I thought you might have been offending somebody. But now, in my opinion,
you might have received a call from somebody, hey, she's playing I'm Black and I'm Proud, you know? But he was like, yeah, shocked, like, oh my God, I can't believe you're playing this. But also, he was glad I was playing it.
Oh, well, now, what I think happened to I'm Black and I'm Proud, I think the major race was not happy with us being black and proud. And the Black Panthers and all those guys out in Oakland, California, were having problems because the powers that be didn't want them organized because they were really doing a good thing in the neighborhood. But to me, the biggest setback to me was the movie Superfly. Because we were still wearing big afros, and then here comes Ron O'Neill. Even though he had naturally straight hair, he was balding. He had that
ugly
wig on.
Now, I love some Melvin Van Peebles too, man. Don't you talk about Melvin Van Peebles and his black flotation movies too.
No. I'm not going to talk about Melvin Van Peebles. I saw something about him on The Griot today. No, the movie, okay. But let me finish. When you saw Chef, now look at Richard Roundtree. That was
cool.
A black man, afro,
yeah.
The sideburns that the black men were wearing back in the day, the cool clothes and all that. He was on the side, of doing something good. He was a private detective. Here comes Ron O'Neill, super fly, pimping, hustling, selling cocaine, carrying on in the neighborhood like a damn fool, excuse my French, driving that crazy automobile, that souped-up Eldorado, I think. And now I love Curtis Mayfield. One of the best artists ever walked the planet to me was Curtis Mayfield, and I don't think it's maybe but four or five songs that he did that I heard that I didn't like. Because normally if Curtis Mayfield did it, going back to the days of him and the Impressions with Jerry Butler and all of them, if Curtis Mayfield was involved, I loved it. And I loved the album Superfly, the music. But when you listen to those lyrics, especially when Curtis Mayfield makes this statement about baddest bitches in the bed. So I'm like, that's what you think about black women? You think we some bad bitches in the bed? And then all of a sudden... But wait a minute. All of a sudden, black women want to be some bad bitches in the bed. I said, now, I ain't been out here risking my life, going to jail, demonstrating, protesting, and carrying on for a man to say that I'm the baddest bitch in the bed, and he going to bring me some cocaine, and he ain't going to put me out there on the corner on a stroll. This is what we fought for? And then all of a sudden, black men start straightening and processing and relaxing their hair again and wearing these long curls and wearing them crazy Superfly clothes. And if you remember Mill Street, I don't know if you remember the Leopard Lincoln.
I do.
Had the Leopard Lincoln, So all of a sudden, all black men want to be
pimp. All to drive me. Up Mill Street and Ferry Street. I used to love seeing the pimps and the hookers.
Now, see there? Now, I didn't get out there and go to jail so you could go looking at pimps and hustlers and hookers.
That used to be so animated. And I used to be
To me, that's when we were no longer black and proud.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you grow up and aspire to be a pimp and a drug dealer.
Good point. You reminded me of this now because I said it was in the early 70s and I was a little girl and I remember we're proud and we're black and love and all of this and we love everybody. You know, we're not only we black and proud, but we love everybody.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, it's like, wait a second, where all that love now? Because I remember I used to love y'all. I used to love going down Mill Street and Ferry Street and seeing the pimps and the hookers. I'm like, look at these people. Wow.
It was very shameful. To make matters worse, whoever had talk shows, Donahue and the crew back in the day, they would have these pimps on there, and of course the pimp would come out with a shirt on open down to his navel. With about 75 gold chains around his neck and some platform shoes with, about 4 or 5 inch thick platforms and 7 inch heels and double knit polyester and them hats sitting on the side of the head. Do you remember the movie I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker?
Yeah.
Well, Huggy Bear had the goldfish in his shoes.
Yeah, that was so
You know, that was a parody of Black Life. And, you know, it's sad to say, but that pretty much was kind of true form.
You're being very committed with telling this story, but it's nothing funny, really.
It's the truth.
That was a sad story.
Yeah, it's really sad. Yeah, and like I said, I love Curtis Mayfield, but when you listen to the lyrics of Superfly, you may want to go on YouTube and play it when we get off the air, off the phone, whatever.
I love Curtis Mayfield, too, because I love me some old school, and I love me some Curtis Mayfield. And you're right,
he's singing, I'm Your Pusher Man. Now, and I'm that nigga in the alley. When I was watching Hangover 2, it was cute and it was funny. You know, I enjoyed that in Hangover 2, but I was like, you know, Curtis Mayfield, couldn't you have come up with some other lyrics?
Lord,
yeah, just listen to Pusher Man.
So that's where the respect was lost. That's when we start losing respect, too, huh?
In my opinion, it was the movie Superfly.
Because you and I talking about the gentleman. We was using the example of San Diego having gentlemen. And I know recently I was talking to Mom. I was like, sometimes like guys should realize that the way they treat women is the way, you know, we as independent as we are women, a lot of times the way guys treat us, that's how we look at ourselves. And
exactly.
So I wonder, well, what happens? Sometimes it seems like even in today, in modern day, it's like sometimes people, guys be like trying to make a woman into a hoe, you know, and don't have respect. And I noticed that men of all ages, I'm not talking about just, you know, like I'm just observing. I'm like, why do people act like that? You might have a good person, but if you treat them a certain way, then a lot of times they're going to act the way you want them to treat them unless they really, have self-respect for themselves. You know?
And then I blame women's lib, too. I can't just throw it all off on us, you know, women's lib. Now, women's lib was a good thing in that women were able to get high-paying jobs that had been previously reserved for men only. When I worked for the telephone company, they used to have job descriptions that were for white men only.
Wow. I hear you say you blame it on women's lib because I know you for women's rights and equal pay.
I certainly am, but now I don't agree with this thing about I'm going to burn my bra. If you're going to burn your bra, I think that ought to be a private thing. And I don't